powerful. Otherwise, he shrugged. So the poor and helpless can get the drugs that keep them poor and helpless, Rick said. People will get narcotics one way or another, O'Hara temporized. They invent new ones in college chemistry laboratories. And you profit from this accommodation. You've gotten rich from it. Not me alone. The others, too. In the United Nations, the USA, elsewhere. Plenty of others. All making money from the drug cartel. And why not? People want drugs, General O'Hara said. You can't stop them. Strangely, Rick smiled. But it was not a pleasant smile. There was not a trace of humor in it. Can't I? He replied, almost in a whisper. Watch and see. Chapter 9. In the motel outside Atlanta, Stoner brought Yolanda Vasquez's oversized square book to the table. Angelique pushed the plastic food cartons to one side as he opened the big crinkled pages. Photographs, she murmured as he leafed through the pages. Old-fashioned photos, printed on plastic microsheets. And menus from restaurants, said Stoner. And these look like reports of some kind. Evaluation reports, Angelique recognized. She must have been a schoolteacher. Look at how yellowed they are. Look, this one's dated from more than 40 years ago. It's her pension form, from the date when she retired. Angelique glanced at the woman sleeping on the narrow bed. I wonder if she retired voluntarily, or if it was mandatory. They thumbed carefully, respectfully, through the big, brittle pages. Why was she so upset about our looking at this? Stoner wondered. It's her life, said Angelique. Her private life. He shook his head. There must be more to it. She got so upset she went into cardiac arrest. Angelique looked up sharply at him, reminded that he was somehow using forbidden nanotechnology on the old woman. He must have nanomachines in his own body, she realized with a shudder. He transferred nanomachines into her when he touched her neck. Then she saw he was smiling tightly at her. I'm not a monster, he said mildly. I'm not going to unleash a tidal wave of nanomachines that will devour everything in their path. Angelique nodded and tried to keep her fear from showing. There were good reasons why nanotechnology was banned. Nanomachines were evil. They'd been used as weapons, used to kill people. They were the devil's invention. But as she watched Stoner's handsome, aristocratic face, she thought that perhaps in his hands, under his control, even nanomachines could be used for purposes of good. The tools aren't evil, she told herself. The people who use them are. But he's beyond evil. He's practically a god. Stoner, meanwhile, kept leafing through the scrapbook. Some of these mementos aren't pasted down very securely, he muttered. He worked a fingernail under the corner of a photo of a group of children posing in a schoolyard.
There's writing on the back of it, Angelique saw.
Yes, said Stoner. Within a few minutes they had pulled off most of the pieces that had been lightly glued onto the scrapbook pages.
It's a message,
Angelique said, scanning the handwritten notes on the backs of the pieces.
A sort of diary.
Yes, said Stoner. A sort of diary. It was nearly midnight before Angelique and Stoner finished reading the bits and scraps of Yolanda Vasquez's apologia. Stoner turned over the last slip of yellowed, crumbly paper, a greeting card for her Big 30 birthday. Vasquez had covered its back with her tight, urgent handwriting. No wonder she wanted to keep this secret, he said, looking over at Vasquez, still curled on the bed, sleeping soundly.
It's a history of how the new morality took over the country, said Angelique, her voice low, almost fearful.
Stoner shook his head. They didn't take over the country. The people handed it to them, willingly.
They didn't realize what they were doing. They didn't understand.
That doesn't change the situation, Stoner said, getting to his feet. The United States is being run by an ultra-conservative religious dictatorship.
It's not a dictatorship, Angelique snapped.
No, Stoner replied softly. And Rome was still technically a republic, even when Nero was sending Christians to the lions. Angelique started to object,
but suddenly she felt utterly weary, totally drained. Too much had happened, was happening. She tried to stand up, but her legs went weak, and she sagged against Stoner. "You saved my life," she murmured.
"I don't think they meant to kill you," he said matter-of-factly. But his arms wrapped around her, held her protectively. "They were using you as bait to trap me."
"What are you going to do now?" she asked, breathless.
"That's up to you."
Angelique slid her arms around his neck and lifted her face to his. "I owe you my life."
Stoner picked her up off her feet and carried her to the empty bed. He deposited her gently and sat beside her on the sagging mattress. She stared up into those steel-gray eyes, her heart pounding.
"Take me to your room," she whispered.
"Get a good night's sleep," he said softly. "We'll make some decisions in the morning."
Angelique clutched at him. "Don't go. Don't leave me alone."
Stoner looked down at her, his expression strange, unreadable. "I'm human enough to see that you're a very lovely woman and very desirable, but you're also very frightened and vulnerable." Then he smiled and added, "Besides, you have your vows to keep."
"I don't care about that," she said, a flood of seething emotions blazing through her. "I want you. I love you."
But Stoner slowly shook his head. "I can understand that you want me, and you instinctively feel that the best way to bind me to you is through sex. That's a very normal primate reaction."
"You're a primate ape too, aren't you?"
"I'm afraid it doesn't work that way for me. Not anymore."
"What are you saying?"
"I'm enough of an ape to be tempted, Angelique. But there's more to it than that. So much more." He got to his feet and went to the connecting door.
"Go to sleep," he whispered.
Angelique felt a soft, warm, comforting fog envelop her. Every muscle of her body relaxed. Her eyes fluttered shut. But just before she sank into the dark oblivion of sleep, she told herself, "He doesn't want me. He looks at me as if I'm some sort of a specimen in a zoo." Her last conscious thought was, "He's disgusted by me."
Chapter 10.
In the morning, Angelique felt refreshed and strong, but smoldering with hurt and angry resentment. Vasquez's rumpled bed was empty. The old woman was nowhere in sight. Angelique saw the scrapbook laying on the table, closed, all the photos and letters and other pieces out of sight. "He must have pasted them all back in place while I was sleeping," she thought. She sat up in bed, still fully dressed. The memory of Stoner's rejection made her cheeks flush hotly. She got to her feet and went to the bathroom. She showered quickly, but not even the jets of hot water could wash away the pain and humiliation she felt. Grimacing with distaste, she dressed in the same clothes she had worn the previous day. She had nothing else to wear. As she stepped out of the bathroom, she heard Vasquez's thin, cackling laughter through the slightly ajar door that connected to Stoner's room. She went to the door, and opening it, saw Vasquez sitting in her power chair, Stoner on the edge of one of the beds, a breakfast of sticky buns and coffee on the table between them. Stoner looked up and smiled at her.
"Good morning. You're just in time for breakfast."
"Good morning,"
Angelique murmured. She pulled up the only other chair in the room and sat next to the old woman.
"Morning,"
said Vasquez cheerfully as she chewed on a bun.
"How do you feel?"
Angelique asked her.
"Fine. Wonderful. Haven't felt this good since I was 90.
She giggled at her own joke. Nanomachines, Angelique thought.
He's rebuilt her heart with nanomachines.
"And guess what?" Vasquez asked brightly. "I'm going to the moon. I'm going to be accepted as a candidate for citizenship in Selene."
Angelique looked sharply at Stoner as Vasquez bubbled on.
"He just picked up the phone right there between the beds and talked to Douglas Stavanger himself up in Selene. Got me approved as an immigrant inside of 10 minutes.
Forcing a thin smile, Angelique said, "Dr. Stoner can be very persuasive." Stoner fixed his gaze on her.
"And you, Angelique, have you decided where you want to go?"
She lifted her chin a notch.
"Yes, I'm returning to Archbishop Overmyer.